Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. This one today may be a bit of a ride on the razor's blade, but I will do it anyway. It is always hard to predict the future, but I will do it in this podcast. So I will talk about three technologies where I don't believe that they will succeed, although they are pretty much hyped today. Let's start with looking back into the history of technology. The history of technology is full of failed dreams and unrealized ideas. About 80 to 90% of all innovations fail. The success of a technology is the exception. And I have selected a few technologies more or less by accident. It's not a systematic selection anyhow, but I selected a few to discuss why they fail, how they fail, and what the role of users and user experiences is in this. So the first reason why technologies fail is pretty simple. It just doesn't work. It's technology not feasible. That happened pretty early in the development of technology very often. So, for example, Leonardo da Vinci is a very good example. He did a lot of constructions. He did a lot of things he developed, and some of them surprisingly worked, but a lot of that simply just didn't work the way it was supposed to work. A more recent example is the Samsung Galaxy Note 7. That was introduced 2016. It was absolutely state-of-the-art, but from the very beginning it had serious battery problems. They had a recall, and then the problems of the batteries continued. They were exploding, they were burning, they were catching fire. And I remember that airlines ask you in the beginning if you are carrying a smartphone of that kind with you, that you please turn it off while you are on the aircraft. And later on in the end, they prohibited taking this smartphone with you on board. And that definitely killed that smartphone. Another reason why technologies fail is that potential dangers are underestimated. An example are Zeppelins. Zeppelins were introduced more than 100 years ago in the very early 20th century. And they were extremely dangerous. I mean, they were flying cigars and they were lighter than air. And that came from the hydrogen they filled into the Zeppelin. So they were basically cabins lifted by enormous amounts of hydrogen, which from our today's point of view must go wrong one day, because hydrogen is easily set on fire, it explodes, and a Zeppelin called Hindenburg flew from Germany to Lakehurst near New York and caught fire while landing in New York. It was in 1937, and I think 35 people died in that accident. And that was then the end of the Zeppelins at that time. Another reason why technologies fail is it's simply too early. The time is wrong and it is too early. One example of that kind is the Newton of Apple, which was in the mid-90s some kind of personal digital assistant. So a screen, a touch screen with a frame and some electronics behind it, and you had your calendars on it and your to-do lists and a couple of games. So that was the Apple Newton. And first of all, it was too early because there was no real mobile data network. So they were more or less disconnected, and they were very expensive at that time. Another example that you may not be aware of is that there was in 2003 a cooperation between the Swiss watchmaker Swatch and Microsoft. And they created what we would call a smartwatch today. It was called Paparazzi. And that was basically like a smartwatch. And it had the problem that there had been no smartphones at that time, so it was pretty hard to handle it. And then it was simply too early for this technology. And I mean, just a footnote, smartwatches, I'm not convinced of them as well. And they almost made it to this top three list here in this podcast episode. I have not added them. I found three other technologies, but they almost made it. So I'm not convinced of smartwatches, not even today. It can be the wrong time, but it can be too late for a technology if you come out. An example of that is the Microsoft smartphone. They came out when the landscape was pretty much set, and they made a second attempt later with the acquisition of Nokia, where then they had the right hardware with for their mobile phone operating system, but it didn't work out either. So the market is set. We have iOS from Apple, and we have Android from Google, and those two operating systems, they share the market, and it was simply too late for Microsoft to jump on the smartphone hype. People are very often not ready to make a change in technologies or applications. So there was a big discussion here in Germany on the new data protection policy of Facebook concerning WhatsApp, and everybody was discussing, we need to go to a new messenger, we need to switch, we need to change, it has to be safer. And I have, I think, 300 contacts on WhatsApp, and one person, only one, finally left WhatsApp and moved to another messenger. So people just stick with what they have, and it works. And if it's a network, if it's a social network behind it, then people will stay with what they have, because they know what they have. They know my friends are here, my contacts are here, and so they will not switch. And this, by the way, is why Google Plus in 2011 failed. Because at that time, almost everybody had a Facebook account, and nobody was ready to switch to another social network for communication. Another reason why technologies fail is that expectations are pushed so high that they can only be disappointed. So marketing sets the expectations to a super high level, and then disappointment is foreseeable. It will happen. One example of that is the Ford Edsel of the mid-50s. Ford communicated that as the perfect car, as the perfect luxury you will have, the perfect technologies. And that was the expectations were set so high that failure was already implemented at a very early stage. plus the fact that radiator grill looked like a private, very private part of female bodies of women. And that in the super conservative times of the mid 50s was another reason why that car simply failed. And once we talk about this, porn sells. A good example of that is the battle of the video formats in the mid-late 70s. So we had VHS, we had Betamax, and we had Video 2000, the brand names of different producers. And VHS was the only of them licensing their format to porn companies, allowing porn videos on their format. And that was the reason why VHS won the battle, and the other two had a niche existence, particularly Betamax in the professional area. But for private use, it was all VHS in the very end. And rumors say that the same thing repeated roughly 40 years later when Blu-ray beat HD DVD. So Blu-ray was ready to allow juicy content while HD DVDs did not allow it. And so Blu-ray made the race. And another fun fact here is when they invented the Blu-ray, the VHS was still there. So the last VHS recorder was built in 2016. Which surprised me when I made the researches for this episode. I read this and said, what? Until 2016, they were building VHS video recorders? All right. Must have been a pretty successful technology. Users and people around users tend to feel uncomfortable when technology gets too prominent, when technology is moving too close to them or infringing their privacy. An example of this is the first Google Glasses in 2012, when the environment felt controlled and monitored. So the glasses had the ability to make photographies and videos just by the blink of an eye of the user. And so everyone around a person wearing Google Glasses felt unsafe, unprotected, unsure. So people just didn't like it. And so people wearing these Google Glasses were called glass holes at that time. Plus that the applications and the use cases did not add real any value to the technology. So it was basically not with a very good value. Google made a second attempt in 2017. Focusing more on professional users in clearly defined contexts. And I think that works better. So if you're a doctor or if you're a mechanic and you get support when you want to repair a machine or you want to make a surgery, then this makes sense with the Google Glasses. But I think in the way their concept is as of today, there is no positive user experience to be gained in this one. Another reason why technologies fail is a very simple one. It is too expensive. An example of this is the Apple Mac Cube that came to market in 2000. It was simply too expensive, plus the fact it wasn't upgradable, it wasn't configurable. Which was a real feature at that time, 20 years ago. And so that one failed as well. I mean, we all believe Apple has tons of success stories, but this is after the Newton, the second Apple technology that I mentioned here. That did not succeed. So it is a normal thing that technologies fail. The coolness factor is very important for the success of a technology. So if you miss the coolness factor, then you may have a serious problems. In the early 20th century, a bit more than 100 years ago, there still was a real competition between combustion engines, steam engines, and electric motors. And they were pretty equal, and they all had advantages and disadvantages, but there was a race between the three. And the combustion engines at that time were very complex, difficult to handle, but they were considered as male, as adventurous, as really cool. So you had this user delight, the emotion that was on the side of the combustion engine. And that was one of the reasons at that time, from a technological point, electric motors at that time would have been far easier to handle and to control. But at the end of the day, because it was so cool to have this noisy combustion engine, it was male, it was strong, it was adventurous. So that one made it. And until today, we fight with that decision, which was a very emotional one at that time. And then this is the last point, and this one was blinking through every now and then through when I was talking about these technologies. If there is no real value behind a technology, it will fail. If technology has a value because technology nerds or developers or the respective marketing people at your manufacturers believe that this is the real cool thing, but users don't accept it, they don't see any use, any value in this one, then it fails. An example here are curved TV displays. So it was either the CES 2018 or 2019. At every booth where they had TVs, there was a curved TV, and it seems like this is the very, very big, very next thing, and everyone will have one. And to me, it was totally unclear why. Why should I have a curved TV screen? And a year later, one year after, there was none. There was not a single curved TV anymore. So they failed. We have curved displays today in cars. So some of them, like for example, the Porsche Taycan, that has a curved display as a cluster instrument. But as TV screens in your home or as computer screens, as well as they had been promoted, they just failed. They do not exist anymore. You understand life backwards. You only understand life backwards, but you have to live it forward. And so I will talk a bit about the three technologies, or more detailed, two technologies and one technological strategy, where I believe that this will not have a future, that this will see very tough times ahead of it. And let's start with that one. The first technology where I believe it doesn't make too much sense, it will probably not succeed, are electric air taxis. This technology sounds like the dream of flying cars will be reality soon. And I mean, the flying cars are and science fiction movies and wherever since, I don't know, 50 years, 60 years, we are dreaming of flying cars. And that seems a bit like these electric autonomous air taxis are part of this, or can be this flying car. Well, they're a big hype as of today. And there are various technical implementations. Some of them are oversized drones, some are more the helicopter style, or some of them have totally alternative designs and technologies, just like a high number of small propellers along a wing so that you can start and land in different ways and different variations. So there are many, many different different designs and technologies in that. There are a couple of reasons why I believe that they will not play a significant role in the mobility of the future. First point is you need an infrastructure for this. And you need to build this infrastructure. And of course, there are landing places at airports. I can imagine that parts of the airports will be used for landing autonomous air taxis. And they can, of course, land on the rooftops of skyscrapers. So that is a scenario I can believe in. But what about other regions, such as smaller towns, smaller cities, or suburbs? So if I reflect on the three places where I live, one is a small town near Stuttgart called Böblingen. Then it is Berlin, the inner part of Berlin. And then it is Puerto Andrach at Mallorca in Spain. And of course, it would be super attractive if I fly down to Mallorca, Palma de Mallorca Airport, and then there is an air taxi taking me the 50 kilometers to my apartment at Puerto Andrach. The problem is, I don't see any place where it could land. Not within, let's say, 300 feet, 100 meters around my apartment, which is usually the area where I park a car, and from there I can walk. But there is no landing place there. And so for me, the question really is, do we have the right infrastructure? I don't think we have it. We will need to build it, and are we ready to build it? Enormous amounts of infrastructure for these electric autonomous air taxis. Second point. Air taxi traffic must be controlled and coordinated. I mean, we have air traffic control for cars. We have traffic rules with traffic signs and traffic lights. And there we need to have the police there. So, but who should do that for these air taxis? Who should do it? And who sets the rules and the standards for this? And of course, it's easy to say, yes, we can do this, just let's do it. But if you have a look at traffic regulations for cars, you will find that even within the European Union, you have different rules, you have different traffic signs, you have different... And if you take US, North America, South America, Asia into the game, then you will find out on a global basis, we have many different kinds of traffic systems and ways of coordinating vehicle traffic. And so I think it will be even more complex for air traffic, and to coordinate all this, I think this will be a pretty hard thing to do. Third point, the entire thing will be so expensive, particularly in the beginning, that there will only be a very low number of users. And without users, it will not be worth building the infrastructure. And without infrastructure, it is not really attractive to fly in these air taxis. So there will be even less users. And I mean, that is a negative spiral. And I don't see how we can turn it around to make it attractive so that it moves into the other direction. And the fourth point, why I don't believe that air taxis will fly, if the technology should fly in the truest sense of the word one day in the future, and it will be a means of mass transportation, then at the very end we turn 2D traffic jams, two-dimensional traffic jams, into three-dimensional traffic jams. And there are movies in cities of the future, science fiction movies, like The Fifth Element, for example, where Bruce Willis flies a taxi through traffic jams with heavy traffic. And I believe this is not really unrealistic. So yeah, with air taxi, we may get the chance to create the three-dimensional traffic jams. In summary, the topic of electric air taxis will become an exclusive niche. There will be individual applications and a very low number of real use cases. Something I can see is regular services from, for example, Pudong Airport to downtown Shanghai. So the airport, Pudong Airport, is pretty far out. It's about an hour, sometimes 90 minutes on a taxi to drive from the airport to downtown Shanghai. So for first-class passengers paying first-class prices, this may be an option. The same for traffic between JFK and Manhattan. So all this will work, but I don't see a mass market that justifies the many startups and technologies we have today. The second technology I don't believe in is cars with plug-in hybrid powertrains. So plug-in hybrid means that you have a battery in the car and that you can charge this battery from power networks with wall boxes. You have a complete electric drivetrain. And in addition, you have an internal combustion engine with a complete internal combustion engine drivetrain with everything that is connected to there. And these cars, according to the manufacturers, the electrical range is between 50, maybe up to 100 kilometers, which is 35 to 70 miles. In reality, it is a little less if you listen to some music, if you have the air condition on or the seat heating, that eats up a lot of battery power, so that will shrink. So for driving short distances, for example, the daily commute from your home to your office, that may work out that you drive this fully electrical. And if you go on a longer trip, then you can use the combustion engine and the connected drivetrain. That, in a way, sounds convincing, but for me, it ain't convincing. So every hybrid technology, whatever you build these hybrids off, but every hybrid technology has the potential to combine the best of two worlds. In reality, it often combines the weaknesses of one technology with the disadvantages of another technology. And then you have something that is worse than the single technologies and that is very often neither fish nor flesh. You have these two drivetrains installed in hybrid cars, the electric one and the combustion engine. So many things of this one, they are doubled. They need to be double technology in this car to feed these two different parallel drivetrains. For example, the plug-in hybrid cars need both a tank for gas or diesel, and they need a battery. Both are storages for energy, and you need both in a hybrid car. And these batteries, they're heavy. They're made from raw materials that are mined under inhumane conditions with enormous environmental damage. And at the end of the lifetime, the recycling of the batteries is still a long way from being a realistic, acceptable, and practical solution. From my point of view, with these batteries, we are creating a new nuclear waste problem. At first, everything seems to be clean, reasonably clean. It seems to work well. But later on, with broader use and long-term use, it becomes more and more difficult to handle. Just as much as we don't know what to do with all the nuclear waste, we may end up in a position where we just don't know what to do with all these worn out batteries of electric and hybrid cars. And finally, people are lazy. Humans are lazy, and they have the right to be lazy. I mean, we all have the right to be lazy. And charging a plug-in hybrid on the power grid with a wall box is comparably difficult, and it takes a longer time. Most of the plug-in hybrid cars are company cars, and I can tell you from my own experience, company cars always come with fuel cards. So you have these cards where you can get gas for free. And so instead of plugging the car to a power plug and let it sit there for an hour or two to get charged, the drivers can again take this card and refill the fuel at any gas station wherever they are and without paying anything. And I mean, it's up to you, but how will most users decide? I think they will go the easy way. And the third one, well, it's not really a technology I want to talk about now, but it's more a business model where I believe it will not really fly. That is the cooperation between Zoox and Amazon, respectively, the acquisition of Zoox by Amazon. And it is not so much about a technology, but more about a business model. You will know Amazon, and Zoox is a US company, US-based, I think they're a Californian, that is planning and developing an autonomous electric vehicle, and meaning fully autonomous vehicle, a kind of small shuttle bus or delivery van that works without a driver. This case reminds me of the Deutsche Post DHL and street scooter acquisition. So DHL, you will know that, is a logistics company, a postal company, and Street Scooter was a spin-off from the University of Aachen in the west of Germany. And one of their professors there, Professor Schu, a guy I really like, he's a bit crazy, but a super cool guy. He developed Street Scooter because he had realized that none of the established automotive OEMs offers a small electric delivery truck or van. And the DHL was the largest customer of Street Scooter, and then they had the idea. Yeah, it's cool that we acquire Street Scooters so we can build our own cars and we can sell them to third parties as well, no problem. But at the end of the day, we have our own car company and we can build our own delivery trucks. That looked convincing at first, but it quickly failed because DHL found out that they are a leading global logistic service provider, but they definitely are not a car manufacturer. And basically, exactly the same thing happens now with Amazon and Zoox, a logistic service company, very well established, very successful, believes that they need an own car company to build their own delivery means. And I have a couple of doubts. One is that the Zoog's vehicle is not having a real clear concept. It's neither a shuttle bus nor a robot taxi. It is somewhere in between. It's relatively small, so it can take only a few passengers. And Amazon would like to use the vehicles to deliver cargo packages, posts, on the last mile, meaning they have a distribution terminal somewhere, maybe at the edge of a town, and then the last mile to the end customer is done by these autonomous delivery vehicles. And sounds like a pretty convincing, pretty good idea. The question remains how this way of autonomous car delivery covers the last few meters or yards or feet of the delivery. The nice thing about getting a postal package, getting something from a postal service, is they bring it to my front door and they hand it over to me. And how shall this happen with a driverless car? I mean, in today's delivery trucks, you have this driver, and a serious portion of this of his or her job is to bring the packages, to bring the deliveries to the person it is supposed to be and supposed to be brought to. And so I don't see how this can happen. And an autonomous car simply cannot walk the last through my front garden door and then to my front door. An autonomous car cannot get into an elevator and drive to the 10th floor of an apartment building and hand over a package there. Something a delivery truck driver can do easily. So in this merger or in this acquisition, the wrong vehicle and the wrong strategy for the intended use case, the delivery of goods to end customer, they nicely combine, and I don't see how this may work out in the future. All right, to summarize this episode, there is plenty of technology out there that had a strong start, or was heavily promoted, was seen as a hype, as the future thing, and it failed. And I see similar, I have a similar foresight for three current technologies, or for three current hypes. One is electric autonomous air taxis. I don't think that they will fly in the way we imagine it today. I don't believe in plug-in hybrid cars because they nicely combine the disadvantages of electric vehicles with the weaknesses of combustion engines. And I think the acquisition of Zoog's by Amazon may not be the smartest steps, the smartest step Amazon has ever done. Let's wait for the future. Let's see how much of my predictions are correct and where I am wrong. I love to be surprised by the future. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.